From the BBC in London, this is Brian Matthew introducing The Beatles Story. It's July 1965. That record, written by Bob Dylan, is number one in the British charts. And even that far back, Dylan was one of the few people in America on the same musical wavelength as the Beatles. The boys have just finished their film Help, which is to be premiered shortly, and in the year ahead, they'll receive their MBEs and go off on another tour of America. Part 7, When the Touring Had to Stop.
When we really got big, we got very bored with it because we had to do, really, you know, we had to do She Loves You and things. And it was not bad at first, but then we just got tired of it, and we were trapped ourselves because we couldn't really play anything else. We didn't have time to do anything else other than our own songs. And it got all very boring for us.
Won't you please help me, help me, help me.
The end of touring. But that's not to happen for some time yet. In the summer of 1965, John's second book was published. It was called A Spaniard in the Works.
Are we going to read one?
Yeah, go and read that.
Why don't we all read it?
Couldn't, it's double track.
Okay, The National Health Cow, page 62. I strolled into a farmyard when no one was about. Treading past the troubles, I raised my head to shout. Don't like that. Come out the cow with glasses, I called and rolled my eye. It ambled up toward me, I melted with a sigh. You're just in time, the cow said, his eyes were all aglaze. I'm feeling like an elephant, I aren't been milked for days. Why is this, I asked it, tugging at its throttles. I don't know why, perhaps it's cause my milk comes out in bottles. That's handy for the government, I thought, and in a tick, the cow fell dead all sudden, I'd smashed it with a brick.
And if you enjoyed that, here's John with another sample.
I have a little budgie, here's my very pal. I take him walks in Britain, I hope I always shall. I call my budgie Geoffrey, my granddad's name's the same. I call him after granddad who had a feathered brain.
And same kind of rubbish.
Yeah, same kind of rubbish, that's right, Paul.
Pardon? Very popular.
I like the first one.
Yeah, I did. I thought it was great.
Hate this one.
Heard lots of rumours and reports that you two are thinking of writing a musical. Is there anything in this?
Thinking of it?
Paul's thinking of it, I'm doing it.
John's actually doing it. I just do all the brainwork behind this operation.
Ringo and I are painting Buckingham Palace.
I was coming to you next week. That's a very fine
That's a
job.
Point of interest.
And marvellous. What colour?
Green.
Green with black shutters.
I see. Might ask you one thing on the music side. When you started hitting it big, you were very much...
smaller than we are now.
suggesting a trend which has since happened all over the world. Do you yourselves foresee any new trend at this stage? What are you listening to right now?
We like folk kind of music, like Bob Dylan, Man. No, we do, you know. Country and Western music, because we've always liked that anyway. I think all the kinds of things we like now, we always like, but we like a few particularly.
They're gonna put me in the movies. They're gonna make a big star out of me. We'll make a film about a man that's sad and lonely. And all I gotta do is act naturally. Well, I bet you I'm gonna be a big star. Might win an Oscar, you can never tell. The movie's gonna make me a big star. Cause I can play the part so well. Well, I hope you'll come and see me in the movies. Then I'll know that you will plainly biggest fool that ever hit the big time. And all I gotta do is act naturally.
Act Naturally, one of Ringo's rare solos, country style, from the Help LP. Dibs Mather tried to get a serious word from the boys about what they were doing at that time.
Well, I'm doing a lot of symphony work on my own at the moment.
Who's that talking?
This is Paul. Doing a lot of symphony work, and
I'm branching out as fullback for West Ham United.
That's George. And I've also got coming up lead in the new Tarzan film.
Who's that talking?
Paul. Well, that ought to be, you know, promising, and it offers me full scope for my acting and physical abilities.
This may destroy the image that's already built.
No, I don't think it will, actually, because...
No, it won't.
Who's that talking?
Mr. Dibbs. Because John sort of built up a bit of a Tarzan image.
This business about the image, though, most of the other pop singers get into trouble for, what, drunk and driving or drunk or something or other.
You've seen, yeah, we're not like
clean.
That. Oh, yeah.
That's yeah, we're so clean.
Clean. Clean, washing and that.
Because we get somebody to drive, as you say.
Friendly with the police.
Has it got anything to do, would you say, with the kind of upbringing that you had in Liverpool?
Yeah, well, it is mainly sort of, you know, the background. Like,
you know, once a scruff, always a scruff.
You know, you get a sort of clean living image, like, coming from there, like, you know.
What we always used to say was that you can take a boy out of Liverpool, but you can never take Liverpool out of a boy.
Who's that talking?
Paul.
Help! I need somebody. Help! Not just anybody. Help! You know, I need someone. Help! When I younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. Now these days are gone, days and I'm gone, not so self-assured. Now I find I've changed my mind and opened up the doors. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down, and I do appreciate you being round. Get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me? Now my life has changed in so many ways. My independence seems to vanish in the haze. But every now and then I feel so insecure. I know that I just need your light. I've never done before. Down, and I do appreciate you being round. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me? When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way. But now these days are gone, days are gone. I'm not so self-assured. And now I've changed my mind and opened up the doors. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down, and I do appreciate you being round. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me? Help me, help me.
I think it's a good song, you know, Help. I mean, it's not being big-headed saying I think it's a good song. I just like it. We all like it. Probably because it's new for us. But I don't think anybody will want to hear a song called Eight Arms. So it's a crummy title, I think. You know, it was okay. We were getting a bit desperate for titles, and then somebody said Eight Arms Told You, and Ringo said it. We all said, yeah, great, you know. But then we suddenly realised a couple of days after that we were all sick of it, and we didn't like it, and we thought it was a bit daft, you know, the idea.
Well, who thought up Help?
I think it was Dick. He just said, let's have a very simple title, which nobody can say is either bad or good, really. You know, it's not a fantastic title, but I think it will work when you sort of actually, the film comes out and things, because it fits very well with the film, the title, and the song.
Paul with Chris Danning. The royal premiere of Help was on July the 29th, and afterwards, Dibbs Mather asked the Beatles, now that they'd done two films, how they felt about it.
I feel all right, you know.
Well, you had a bad leg this morning, what about that?
It's quite good making films, said John Winsor.
Do you prefer it to working in front of an audience?
No.
The new film, Help, how did you enjoy it?
It was a wonderful experience, I must say, especially working with such great actors as Leo McKern and John Bluthnell and Victor Spinetti and
John
Helen LeBron.
John talking.
And Roy Kinnear. It was
a wonderful experience. Saying John's talking.
They can't hear John talking when George keeps saying that.
I'm telling the movie this, talking.
Yeah, George and John.
Hello,
boys. Is there any likelihood that any of you will branch out into the cinema as actors later?
Not likely. We're not going to let Ringo branch out unless we get a percent.
Cut! Okay, cut it, Harry! Cut it there!
Here I stand, head in hand,
turn my face to the wall. If she's gone, I can't go on feeling 2 foot small. Everywhere people stare, each and every day. I can see them laugh at me, and I hear them say, got to hide your love away. Hey, you've got to hide your love away. How can I even try? I can never win. Hearing them, seeing them, how could she say to me, love will find a way? Gather round all you clowns, let me hear you say. Hey, you've got to hide your love away. Hey, you've got to hide your love away.
Hello from John, and definite signs of the admiration for Dylan that they were talking about earlier. In August, the Beatles set off for their second major tour of America. Now, this time, I was lucky enough to go with them for the first week, and it was one of the most exciting times of my life. By all accounts, the tour wasn't much different from the previous one. The highlights for me, and the Beatles, were the concerts at Shea Stadium in New York. The kids outside in the queue. Inside, the Beatles chauffeur Alf Bicknell helped Mal Evans with the equipment.
We sort of come down this long corridor underneath the stadium itself and then out of this tunnel, you know, into the open, in the sunlight. Oh, and just to hear these 56,000 people, unbelievable, you know, that everything seemed to shake, you know, it was a great thrill for me.
Tony Barrow, MEMS press officer.
First of all the roads were opened right across the centre of New York, which in itself was sort of a sight to be seen, driving across New York without stopping at any intersection, without stopping at any lights kind of thing, all the way from the hotel to the heliport, getting into this helicopter and then flying out to Shea Stadium.
They wouldn't allow us to drop right into the arena like last year, and so we had to land on the roof of the World Fair. From there we went into the stadium in a Wells Fargo armoured truck. That was good. I didn't think Wells Fargo was still going, actually. But the Indians got them all years ago.
Feel alright. I'll get you anything, my friend, if it makes you feel alright. Cause I don't care too much for money, but money can buy me love.
Well, it was marvellous. It was the biggest crowd we ever played to.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Even counting Australia?
Yeah, anywhere in the world. It was the biggest live show, I think, anybody's ever done, they told us.
Yes,
and it was fantastic, you know. And it was just great. They could almost hear us as well, even though they were making a lot of noise, because the amplification was
It was very good, actually. I must confess, I could only distinguish about three of the numbers, which I happen to know and could hear.
Yeah, well, the well-known ones you can pick up.
That's right, yeah. Did you do anything that you don't normally do in
concerts? We did I'm Down, so, you know, because I did the organ on the record, I decided to play it on stage for the first time. I didn't really know what to do because I felt naked with that guitar, so I was doing old Jerry Lee, just putting my foot on it, and George couldn't play for laughing.
So George might not have been able to play everything, but just how much could those screaming Beatle fans hear anyway? Laura Cohen.
I heard everything. In fact, I noticed that if I stopped screaming, I heard less, which was amazing. I couldn't believe it, because it was like I heard everybody else's scream rather than just my scream.
With another man, that's the end, little girl. Let this be a sermon, I mean everything I said. Baby, I'm determined. Run for your life if you can, little girl. Hide your head in the sand, little girl. I'll catch you with another man. That's the end, little girl.
Run for your life, which the Beatles had to do from time to time to escape from the enthusiastic fans. The tour continued through America and Canada.
Way out now. She was
Day Tripper, yet another number one record for the Beatles. In September, on the 13th, Ringo's wife, Maureen, gave birth to a boy, Zach. And in October, the boys lined up before the Queen to be made members of the Order of the British Empire.
The man shouted out, George Harrison, John Lennon, Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr. And Starr was the cue for us to walk forward, left foot first. It was just like a show.
And we bowed and then we walked to the Queen, then we walked back and bowed. And we walked away.
Left foot forward.
Yes, we always started.
We were drilled beforehand by some big guardsman fella. And every time he was reading out the names and he got to Ringo Starr, he kept cracking up.
Nice man.
The only people there was nobody trying to get at us, though. They were all friendly, you know.
All the people
waiting
for
it. We did about 50 autographs.
We signed for all the people waiting to get their MBEs and OBEs.
Yeah, they were all nice, you know. And there's only one fella who said, I want it for my daughter. I don't know what she sees in you.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Then they were introduced to Her Majesty the Queen.
She said to me, have you been working hard lately? And I couldn't think what we had been doing, so I said, no, we've been having a holiday, but we'd been recording, but I couldn't remember that. And then she said to me, what did she say? Oh, have you been together long? And I said, yes. Well, wasn't a joke. I said, yes, many years. And Ringo said, 40 years.
And we all sung of the same name.
She laughed.
Yes, she laughed.
We all had a little laugh.
She just said,
it's a pleasure to give you this.
You know, that's what she said to everyone. And then she put John's on and said to him, he'd be working hard.
I must have looked shattered.
I was just butting in while she spoke to everyone else. She said, did you start it all? And I said, no, they did.
And then he said, I'm the little one.
I said, I joined last, I'm the little fellow. As I am.
Wasn't that cute?
Look at him, he's smiling.
The Beatles had plenty to smile about. Later, Chris Denning asked them why they thought they'd been given the MBE.
I don't know. Probably got it for making money and that for Britain. I'd say it, a rough guess.
You think so, really?
Yeah, well, you know.
They make more than we do.
Yeah.
Who do?
Britain do.
Oh, I see. What do you think about it, Ringo?
It's nice, you know. I enjoy being an MBE.
Are you going to kind of put it after your name on your records and things?
No, and you needn't stay on your knees.
Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl, but she doesn't have a lot to say. Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl, but she changes from day to day. I want to tell her that I love her a lot, but I gotta get a belly full of wine. Her Majesty's a pretty nice girl, someday I'm gonna make her mine, oh yeah, someday I'm gonna make her mine.
On December the 3rd, 1963, they issued another LP record produced by George Martin, as usual.
I think Rubber Soul really was the first of the albums which really presented a new Beatles to the world. Up to then, we had been making albums rather like a collection of their singles, and now we're really beginning to think about albums as a bit of art on their own, you know, being a bit pompous about it, but we were trying to think of the album as an entity of its own, and Rubber Soul, I think, was the first one to emerge in this way.
Norwegian Wood, or This Bird Has Flown, featuring John's vocal, with some help from Paul, and George showing his interest in the sitar. It was mainly written by John whilst he and George Martin were on a skiing holiday in St. Moritz with their wives.
Is there anybody going to listen to my story, all about the girl who came to stay? She's the kind of girl you want. it makes you sorry. Still you don't regret a single day. Ah, girl. Girl, girl. When I think of all the times I've tried so hard to leave her, she will turn to me and start to cry. And she promises the earth to me, and I believe her. After all this time, I don't know why. Ah, oh, girl. Girl, girl. She's the kind of girl who puts you down when friends are there, you feel a fool. When you say she's looking good, she acts as if it's understood she's cool.
Smith, the recording engineer.
The musical progress, shall we call it, or the musical change that they were going through did involve greater thought in terms of sounds. They became more fussy. Nicely so, of course. I mean, obviously, they wanted to improve their sounds. They had to, I suppose, try to think of new sounds. And this meant a certain amount of experimentation. It certainly meant a good deal more frustration.
He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like
I wondered if Michelle on that album would have struck the boys as a good single.
No, a lot of people said that. But, see, there are songs which we like, but we wouldn't like to have out as singles. Because it's a very funny thing about putting a single out, you know. I think we always used to think for a single we'll have to have something that's pretty fast. I don't know why, you know, just because they always sounded like the singles, you know, the faster ones. And so when we did Michelle, I think we all thought it was okay, you know, but we just didn't want it out as representative of us at the time.
Michelle, my belle, these are words that go together well, my Michelle. That's all I want to say. Until I find a way, I will say the only words I know that you understand. Michelle, my belle, someday more keep on, play bien on some, play bien on some. I need to make you see, oh, what you mean to. Until I do, I'm hoping you will know what I mean. I love you. Get to you somehow. Until I do, I'm telling you so you'll understand. Michel, ma belle, sans les mots qui vont très bien ensemble, and I will say the only words I know that you'll understand, my Michelle.
Four tracks from Rubber Soul. Beatles in quieter mood, with a hint of a more serious approach to their music. The start of 1966 heard this new sound jumping about the charts. The Beatles, having completed a tour of Britain with the Moody Blues just before Christmas, didn't go into a Christmas show as they had done 2 years previously. George got married on January the 21st to model Patty Boyd, whom he'd first met whilst filming, and throughout the spring, the Beatles spent most of their time in the recording studio. June the 10th, another smash single.
Paperback writer's eye.
Shortly afterwards, on June the 24th, they went back to Hamburg for the first time since 1962, then on to Japan, where thousands of police were assigned to guard them following threats on their lives if they played the sacred Budokan Hall. The pressures were building. In Manila, they got a really hot reception. Unknown to them, it seems they were expected to go to the palace to meet the president and his lady. Vic Lewis, who set up the tour, told Brian Epstein about the dilemma.
Somebody said that we're supposed to be at a garden party. I know nothing about it, and I'm sure you don't. Of course, he said he didn't. And he said, we're not going. So I said, now, wait a minute, I don't think we ought to say we're not going. I said, we're in a foreign country. And I think we ought to think about it. So Brian, in the way that he was, turned around and said, I'm not thinking about it. As far as I'm concerned, we've received no official invitation from the palace or from the president, and as such, I'm not going to have the boys go around there.
Within a couple of hours, the newspapers and television news carried the story of the Beatles snubbing the president. On August the 12th, the Beatles embarked on yet another tour of America, I spoke to them just before they went and asked them if they knew exactly where they were going to.
Now, 14 different places we're going to.
Yeah. We've got an hour's holiday in the middle of it.
Anywhere that you played on the last trip?
Yeah, I think so, like New York, Los Angeles.
We're doing Shea Stadium again?
And in fact, most of the places are the same. You know, the main big places we've been to.
Because some of the audience couldn't get out from last time. They're still in there. So we're doing the return show.
You were watching all that baseball. What a drag.
Well, it's it's quite a good game.
Is it?
Baseball. Americans like it.
Just in case they're listening. Over there.
Oh, we heard they are.
Jolly good.
Well, I'm sorry to say I sharen't be coming this time.
Oh, why, Bri?
Oh, too busy. Aren't you coming?
No, yes, well, that's
one of our old tricks. You should have seen him last time, readers.
Yes. With his pink spotted shirts on.
Out all night at the clubs.
Yes.
Learning baseball.
The best club was in the plane, though. Is it? You're going to travel the same way this time?
Yeah, I suppose we'll have to.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody takes off before you get off the ground. It's a very good trip.
Well, it was for you. We were busy.
Right, well, I hope you have a nice time.
Well, thanks, Brian.
Thanks very much, Brian.
See you then.
It's been a wonderful.
Well, can we go then?
Yes.
Well, we'll just go.
Just coming home, Dad.
Yeah. Come on, Charlie. Let's go. Here we go.
And off they went. Business with the tour was a success, but a problem arose over one of John's comments at a press conference. Tony Barrow, NEM's press officer at the time.
John had been passing a quite valid social comment that he felt that more people were prepared to turn out to see a Beatles show than were prepared to turn out for God, turn out for Jesus, turn out to go to church. He wasn't boasting we're bigger than Jesus now. He was in fact making, as I say, what amounts to a very valid social comment, one feels, in the context of the original piece, but lifted out and put on its own like that, of course, it disturbed a large number of people around the world, and perhaps most of all in America's Bible Belt, where one recalls copies of Beatle records were burnt and photographs of John Lennon were burnt and so forth. So the arrival in Chicago, August 12, 1966, it was auspicious from John Lennon's personal point of view, because that night in the hotel there, for the first time perhaps, he personally faced the press, the TV and other news media on his own and in his own right, not particularly as a Beatle or as an author or anything like that, songwriter, but in fact to sort of explain something that he was taking a sort of great personal responsibility for and felt terribly badly about, was greatly concerned lest this thing that had been taken out of context should in fact rebound. He didn't blame, for instance, Maureen Cleave in the least, because, you know, the way he'd said it to her had been reported the way he'd said it, but he was very concerned that the whole thing could rebound on the Beatles. He was more frightened, really scared stiff that night than I've ever seen him, as I say, because the whole thing fell on his shoulders. It wasn't your regular Beatles press conference with a few nifty wisecracks and passing the joke to and fro between him and Ringo or him and Paul or something. This was John on his own coming out into the hotel room, three quarters of the hotel room being filled with journalists and cameramen and so forth, and unfortunately the reporters there still seemed to have got the wrong impression. John went to great lengths, he spent perhaps 5 or 10 minutes sort of trying to explain what he had not meant as well as what he had meant. And at the end of this great, long, fairly humble explanation, up popped a reporter and said, OK, but the main point is, John, are you prepared to apologise? Meaning, in other words, that, you know, they just hadn't taken the point of this at all. And in desperation at the end of that session, I remember him saying, OK, well, look, you know, if that'll make you all happy, I'll apologise. I still don't know quite what I've done. I've tried to tell you what I did do, but if you want me to apologise, if that'll make you happier, I will do. And that's the way it went.
Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Father Mackenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear. No one comes near, the
look at him working, darning his socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came. Father Mackenzie wiping the dirt from his hands as he walks from the grave. No one was saved. All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong?
The tour ended on August the 29th, 1966, in San Francisco at Candlestick Park.
There was a sort of end-of-term spirit going, if you like, but there was also this kind of feeling amongst all of us who were around the Beatles that this might just be the last concert that they'd ever give. And I remember Paul casually in the very last minute saying, "Have you got your cassette recorder with you, have you?" And I said, "Yes, of course. Tape it, will you? Tape the show." Which I did in a sort of, you know, literally just holding a microphone up in the middle of a field there and collecting upon it what could be. But, I mean, as a personal souvenir of the occasion, in fact, something very nice to have. And the difference, the only difference, as I say, it was not in any way really a spectacular occasion. It was good, there was a good audience, but nothing like, say, Shea Stadium or any of the really magnificent concerts that there had been. Nothing special about it at all, except that the Beatles seemed to put in extra ad lib link material that they hadn't put in or never did really put in on other occasions. But then coming out of San Francisco that night, getting aboard the charter flight to fly back down the west coast of California to LA, George Harrison, one of the first things he said when he leant back in the plane and took a drink was, "Well, that's it, I've finished, I'm not a Beatle anymore."
The sound was always bad, and we'd just be joking to each other to keep ourselves amused, and it was very impersonal. And and not only that, with so many police and kids and flying around, it was really like we got into a big political thing, you know, with all that Christ and Manila and things. And at that time, I just was so sick of it. I think we all were. It was like nervous wrecks getting flown around everywhere, and press conferences everywhere we went. You know, it was just too much.
And really, who could blame George or any of them? Reality had outgrown the myth. Here were four human beings who needed time to develop their music, see their wives, and get out from the circus that was the Beatles on tour. George himself was set on going to India. John was to try solo film acting. Paul, composing for a film, and Ringo went on holiday in Spain. In the next chapter of the Beatles story, how they made Sergeant Pepper, went filming on a bus, and developed an interest in fruit. The Beatles story was written and produced for the BBC by Johnny Veerling.